and all the partisan dysfunction and all the work you're doing. But we will also, I'd like to talk about how that played into the craziness of the House GOP caucus, you know, how extremism is being rewarded there, as you know. Funnily enough, in all states, Johnson's from Louisiana, a state you know well from your work. So it's interesting. So that's kind of what I'd like to do. So if you are ready, we can play the theme music and jump into it. Yeah. We'll just be in conversation.
Let's do it.
All right. All right, D. See you on the other side, Rich.
All right.
Dirty Moderates, you all know democracy is our game here, our raison d'etre, our purpose, our meaning. I recently went to an amazing conference on democracy, Democracy Summit, met all sorts of amazing people, and I left, I think I would even go so far to say, as optimistic as I've ever been about the potential for democracy here, given the amount of different people and groups I met and got to talk to. And learned what they're doing on the ground, state by state. You know, Americans often forget we don't just have a president. You know, we have a whole system of government. We've got states, 50 of them. They're famously referred to as laboratories of democracy. And a lot of good work is being done there and then locally. And among the people I met was a guy named Rich Barton. He is our guest today. Let me introduce you, Rich, before. How are you, by the way? Welcome to the program. Hey. Rich is a democracy fellow at what's called Unite America, which we're going to talk about. He is also a professor at Syracuse University. It's at their Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs. He did his doctorate and doctoral research in sort of the way electoral and legislative institutions shape Congress, lawmaking, and the American political economy. Dr. Richard Barton, how are you?
I am so good. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm good. So before we get into the House Clown Caucus, speaking of political dysfunction and governing, let's just talk about you and Unite America. Let's tell everybody, because many of them were not with me, obviously, and not everybody heard this. What is Unite America? What is its purpose? And tell us about the good work you're doing.
Yeah. So Unite America is an election reform organization that also has a think tank arm, the Unite America Institute. And so I'm within the think tank, but more broadly, in addition to supporting good, you know, academic research and getting that research out into the world on different kinds of election systems and the kinds of impacts they have on governance and the broader society, they also are involved in actual on the grounds campaigns for election reforms. And in particular, they support campaigns for nonpartisan primary reforms. So including the top two system in Washington State and California, but also final four or final five voting like they have in Alaska. And so they're supporting different campaigns. You know, there's a ballot measure in Nevada that might bring final five voting to Nevada. And so they're actively involved around the country supporting that kind of election reform.
Right. So there seems to be, and I know you've written about this, a kind of prevailing view or conventional wisdom that our partisanship obviously is fracturing us, but specifically partisan primaries. So when you talk about nonpartisan primaries, can you go a little bit into that? Like, I love the idea that everybody could vote in either primary. This could be an open house. And people always say, well, then what do parties get to choose? It's if parties get to choose a normal person, that then that following November, we can all, they're normal people, we can have our choices, right? How does that play out, like, in terms of what Unite America is doing? Like, do you think you can, I know Louisiana you've worked on, which has nonpartisan primaries, although they just had a clear winner in their governor's race, who was a Republican, but they had choices. John Bel Edwards, the Democrat, had served 8 years. So how does this play out? Like, what are the step-by-step ways you can kind of say to Republicans and Democrats, hey, it's going to be an open book now, and we all want to have a say?
So there's so I'm going to use the term, nonpartisan primaries.
Okay.
Describe something that's different than when people talk about open primaries, by which they often are talking about open partisan primaries. So,
okay.
When each individual party has their own election to determine who the nominee is going to be.
Right. So
a lot of states have closed primaries in which only voters who affiliate, who are registered with that political party, can participate in those. Mm-hmm. Right. So I live in a closed primary state in New York.
Right. California's too. Yeah.
And then there's sort of different degrees of openness of the partisan primary. But on the most open side, it's Democrats and Republicans still having their own primary elections, but regardless of independence and even members of the opposite party, they can choose to cast a ballot in either party's primary. They just show up on primary election day and cast that ballot. What's distinct about nonpartisan primaries? So the system that is currently used in California, Washington State, Alaska, is that rather than having separate elections where Republicans are just running against other Republicans in the primary, Democrats are just running against other Democrats, mm-hmm. All of the candidates are competing against each other in that first stage, in that primary. So like in the top two system in California or in Washington State and now in Alaska, all of the candidates, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Green Party, Libertarian, whomever, they are all directly competing against each other in that first stage, and all of the voters can participate. And so what makes those election system distinct from even open partisan primaries is that it changes the strategy of the candidates. It means that, say, a Democratic candidate isn't just worried about being flanked on the left from a more progressive Democrat, because they're also running against Republicans and independent voters. And so it changes the strategy, and it gives candidates an incentive to build coalitions that are broader and that are end up being more representative of their district.
Right. No, I mean, that's one of the things that happened in Louisiana. I think, believe it happened in Alaska, where Lisa Murkowski, the incumbent Republican and longtime, I would argue kind of a centrist, staved off a far right MAGA challenger, I believe, in 2020, can't remember, 2022, I think it was. Yep. So that's, right. Yeah. And how, right. And how is, if you could, how do you delineate like what you would call nonpartisan primary from ranked choice voting? What's the relationship of those two things? I just want our audience to understand that, because a lot of these terms vis-a-vis electoral reform are thrown around. Everybody goes, oh, that would be great. But then people never quite understand what it means, you know?
Yeah. Great question. So I apologize. I had COVID,
right.
And I'm still coughing.
All right. No worries.
So you can have nonpartisan primaries without ranked choice voting. The reason why they are coupled together is if you want to have a general election winner who has mm-hmm. to get a majority of the vote, right? Which I think is something that at least conceptually most of us would say makes some sense, that we want to create the incentive and have actual representatives who had to win over a broad enough of the electorate to reach that 50% plus one threshold. And so if you do that with the top two system in California or in Washington State, mm-hmm. so what happens is that you have the nonpartisan primary that I described, all the candidates run against each other, all the voters can vote in that primary, and then the top two candidates move on to the general election. Well, since there's only two of them, one of them is going to get the majority, right? And aside from the unlikely scenario of a perfect tie, right? One of those two candidates, if all you have is two candidates, is going to get the majority of the vote. But if you have in Alaska, they have a different system, and a lot of people would say a better system, where it's not limited to the top two candidates who compete in the general election. It's the top four.
Right.
And, you know, some people are pushing for a top five, which is what will be on the ballot in Nevada. If you have that.
When is it in Nevada? In 24?
So it's going to be on the ballot. It was on the ballot in 2022 and it won. But in Nevada, in order to have a ballot initiative turn into law, it has to be successful in consecutive election cycle.
Oh, interesting. So then it'll be one more round of this, and if it passes, then it'll be right.
Same thing. Same proposals. You know,
that's interesting. Okay,
but it's got to win a second time in a row. So
it's like, let's get a second opinion politics, right? Right. It's kind of like, let's just I guess not. Well, I guess not, because it's the same thing. It's a reapproval, I guess you would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea is, when it wins that first time, voters and different stakeholders know to take it really seriously. And so let's see what happens when people are taking it even more seriously, when there's even more sort of information on it being, and it's a more salient issue.
Right.
But back to your question. So, yes. So when you have a top four or top five system, and that's how many candidates are competing in the general election, and you want to get somebody to reach a majority, to win a majority in order to be the representative, then that's not guaranteed in, a single vote election. And so that's why these top four, top five nonpartisan primaries are often coupled with ranked choice voting, as they are in Alaska, a lot of proponents like to call it instant runoff voting, right? Because essentially what it's doing is, instead of, if nobody reaches a majority, having another round and having another election, which is something that has historically been done, and some states do this. Instead, it's like the voters are already in the booth. Just have them tell you who their second choice would be, right? And their third choice. And we can do this all at once.
Right. And then how about the bugaboo, everybody's favorite demon? And it is a demon, the gerrymandering idea. And how that obviously sort of compounds the partisan polarization, compounds the partisan issue, right? Would you say, and I'm sort of spitballing here, that the work you're doing with nonpartisan primaries and the work on ranked choice voting, are those an antidote to gerrymandering, would you say, or is that not accurate?
That's a really good question. So, I would say that those kinds of reforms, the nonpartisan primary reforms, the ranked choice voting reforms that I'm talking about, in particular, the ranked choice voting reforms that are coupled with nonpartisan primary reform, mm-hmm. That they're perfectly sort of consistent with, they're compatible, I should say, with,
okay,
say, independent redistricting reforms that eliminate or at least mitigate gerrymandering. But there's a different theory of the case. Like, when people talk about gerrymandering as the problem, and
right,
whether it's creating, some people argue for larger multi-member districts or proportional representation, where you don't have to worry about gerrymandering, or just independent redistricting commissions, where you have some sort of like more neutral or more objective process for drawing the boundaries. The theory of that case, in part, is that, like, when you gerrymander, what you're doing is, like political scientists, we use this term, like cracking and packing. A lot of what you're doing, right, is you're strategically packing a bunch of partisans into one district and making the districts less competitive, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And so the theory of the case there is that the reason why, you know, Congress and our state legislatures are so dysfunctional is there's just not enough competition between the parties.
Right. Exactly. Right.
And I think there's absolutely something to that. What I would say, though, is that primary reform is a necessary, and I would dare say even more important, and I'll make the case for that in a second.
Sure.
But is really a distinct solution to a distinct problem, which is that regardless of how competitive the general election is, if candidates need to win that first round by appealing to their partisan base,
yep,
by not getting outflanked by the ideological extreme, that is still going to change their behavior and change the kind of candidates who win the nomination and who ultimately win the general elections.
Yes. Yeah.
Regardless of how competitive the general elections are. Right. And as evidence of this, I would say, you know, the Senate is not impacted by gerrymandering, right?
Right.
And yet, you know, Mitch McConnell is pretty unhappy when he's stuck with like Herschel Walker and Mamet Oz.
Right.
You know, and that has nothing to do with gerrymandering. Those are extremely competitive states, right? Which is why Mitch McConnell cared so much about the fact that he was getting stuck with some pretty crappy candidates, right? Yep. But the reason why he did was because of partisan primaries, right?
Right. So in many ways, you know, we might be able to say that gerrymandering isn't necessarily the cause. It's a symptom of all the partisanship in a lot of ways. You know, in other words, even though it works alongside of it and can compound it, right? If, to your point, you know, if the Republican primaries in those states, in competitive purple states, are still nominating extremist candidates, right? In the Senate, as you mentioned, gerrymandering doesn't apply, the Senate races. So then partisanship really is the prevailing obstacle here, hence the work you're trying to do and nonpartisan primaries and all that, but to the point of the House of Representatives, okay, and the chaos now, Mike Johnson from, I believe, Louisiana's 4th District, and I don't know the full makeup of Louisiana. Well, what area is that? Is that Baton Rouge? Where is it? Okay.
It is in Baton Rouge. I pulled it up. I'm looking at, I was curious myself and just coincidentally.
I had a feeling, well, I know where some of the others are. So I was thinking he's probably from Baton Rouge, although I shouldn't assume because the GOP has Marjorie Taylor Greene not as their speaker and she's from Northwest Georgia. It's not like she's from Atlanta or anything. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be from a known city, but I think the thing that is, you're watching this, you know, there have been 4 speaker nominees, even Kevin McCarthy had to go through 15 rounds. They are hostage. Again, they're hostage both because gerrymandering has made those districts completely non-competitive. I think you and I spoke at the Democracy Conference that if there's 435 House seats, and there's only like 80 competitive House races every 2 years or so. Is that right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
So it depends on how you measure it, but it's somewhere, depending on how you measure it, it's somewhere between 40 to 80. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's insane, right? I mean, it's like 20%, 30% of them are all that matters. And you see that now. So you end up where the Republicans can't agree as a governing party, because again, the candidates who appeal to the loudest, most fringe, most partisan, most raucous voices are heard and wouldn't even allow a guy like Tom Emmer to be in there because he voted for marriage equality. Not only is this outrageous, they are so behind the eight ball with the nation on this. I mean, you know what I mean? That's the hill you're going to die on, marriage equality. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah, well, we can't put that guy up. He voted for the Civil Rights Act of 64. It's like they're to the point of the work you're doing, they're speaking to such a narrow majority. So,
yeah. I mean, even most Republican voters, when you poll them, have moved on from that.
Yeah. Yeah. This is not these hotbed issues, but also, you know, the other thing that I think is interesting is you have all of these gerrymandered districts and you've got all this fractiousness. And this is why I think with the work you guys are doing is so important. You know, all of this becomes, I call it, federalized in the discussion. It's the House and it's the Senate, it's the presidency, but we don't talk about how to change those things at the grassroots level and at the state level and at the local level. And again, you know, you're dealing with a lot of those, you know, if we can, and your organization can get us to nonpartisan primaries, a guy like Mike Johnson wouldn't probably be that viable anyway, you know? I actually had never heard of him before this, to be honest. I did hear, speaking of partisanship, so apparently he has is an adopted black son. And during the George Floyd, I read this just this morning, during the George Floyd stuff, he of course was expressing sympathy and saying how his black son gets treated differently than his white son. That's been released or picked up by the Daily Wire or one of these right-wing groups. And now they're claiming he's an undercover Democrat. He's using the left's racial narrative. I mean, this is where we go with this. You know, the guy's just condemning the horrible murder of an innocent guy, you know, and we're getting into that, which is where our politics is, you know?
Yeah.
And so we're, so just to wrap up, where is Unite America right now? Like, where are you working specifically, and in what states are we, or do you think you're making strides in? I know that you recognize the problem in places like Louisiana, Alaska, and have tried to do stuff in Washington, but what else, where are your eyes? Where do you put your eyes on what prize, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, so I mentioned Nevada.
So that's good.
There's, you know, there's a lot of good work being done in Oregon right now, where there's a number of different initiatives that they're trying to get on the ballot.
And they've always had mail-in ballots, which has been great for a long time. Yeah. Just as a side note, that's another group that's doing, you're making sure everybody gets a ballot helps too.
That's right. But they have some reforms that they're trying to get, you know, onto the ballot for ranked choice voting and nonpartisan primaries. There's a couple different proposals that are still in the works. So the one that I'm particularly keen on is, I forget if it's final four or final five, but it's one of the two with ranked choice voting.
Oh, having five, like you mentioned, five candidates, available.
That's right. Yeah. So other than that, like, I know that we have grassroots organizations, both people who work for state chapters of Unite America, but then a lot of other just nonprofits that are democracy reform organizations that we support across the country. I mean, in nearly every state. And so, you know, the story in each state is unique. You know, I have a friend I talked with the other day who's in Connecticut, which is basically, you know, one of the most pretty much the most closed primary state that we have in the country at this point. Most of their nominations are, if they have a vote at all, are determined in a convention with a very, very small number of Connecticut residents. And so, you know, so even there, it's just like incremental change, just opening up that partisan primary a bit, like allowing to just hold primaries rather than conventions. So like we're trying to, you know, we're working hard to be active in each state and to meet each state sort of where it is. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay, great. Before we go, where can people find you, Rich? Unite America. Where's the best place? Twitter, Instagram, website? Give us some info.
Yeah, so Unite America has a great website, uniteamerica.org, all one word. And so you can find the white papers I've been working on there, but also just updates on different campaigns that are going on throughout the country. You can find me at Rich Barton 85 at Twitter. And if anybody's interested in, you know, following up and talking more, you can also email me at rich@uniteamerica.org.
All right. Well, Rich, thanks to you and Unite America, change is afoot. And that's always when people think nothing's happening or working in government. There is a lot of dysfunction and there are a lot of, antidotes to dysfunction. So I appreciate the work you guys are doing. Thank you for being on the program. Audiences are appreciating your efforts. Certainly our audiences who are sick and tired of partisanship. We are a politically homeless podcast. We like to be people's port in the storm. And I think you're helping us find our moorings. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And Adam, I appreciate all your hard work. And I love all the dirty moderates out there. So thank you.
Thanks, Rich. All right. In the meantime, folks, stay dirty, stay moderate. We'll see you next time.